If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Final hour of the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Seren Petro alongside Blake Schneiders. Before our preview of the Sunflower Showdown that takes place tomorrow night in Manhattan, kickoff will be at 7 p.m. between Kansas and Kansas State. Quick check in on Missouri and Arkansas. The Tigers right now are punting the ball back to Arkansas with about 10 seconds left in the second quarter. So it appears, barring any thing drastic, the Tigers will go into half trailing Arkansas 21-20. Again, they need a win today to become bowl eligible. As for the game tomorrow night in Manhattan, both these teams are already bowl eligible. However, both those teams are playing for much different things in this Sunflower Showdown. For Kansas, you've already accomplished what everybody perceived to be impossible back at the beginning of the year. You're 6-5. You're bowl eligible for the first time since 2008. A win, you snap a 13-game losing streak to your rival in Kansas State, and to do so in front of their home fans would be a perfect cherry on top. More than a cherry on top, icing, maybe it's both, to a perfect year for the Kansas Jayhawks. You have been 1-5 since starting 5-0 this year, but you have played a much tougher spot in your schedule of the last couple of weeks than you were at the beginning of the year. You know, the beginning of the year, you got to play West Virginia first. You got to play Iowa State. Both those teams are below you in the standings. You're coming off being drubbed by Texas 55-14 at home. So not really high spirits for the Jayhawks going into Manhattan against Kansas State. As for the Wildcats, much, much more on the line. Going into this year, it felt like Kansas State was a dark horse to win the Big 12. Through two games, they really appeared to be that team. They shut out South Dakota 34-0. They hammered Missouri 40-12 at home. But then they get Tulane, and they fell to Tulane. And everybody at that point kind of scoffed at the idea of being a dark horse, and little did everybody else know that Tulane was going to be a top 20 team when it was all said and done. But Kansas State has gone through a little bit of ups and downs this year. Now, you lost to TCU in Fort Worth, a TCU team that is right now projected to go 12-0 and reach the Big 12 championship game as they have Iowa State tomorrow, but a TCU team that maybe is a little bit overrated. I don't want to go as far to say overrated because 11-0 is 11-0. They just beat Texas and Austin on College Game Day, but to me, it felt like Kansas State in that game, if they didn't have a couple of injuries, would have knocked off the Horned Frogs. But Adrian Martinez went out, a couple defensive players went out, and you lost that game. When you had a chance to really jump into the driver's seat of the Big 12, you lost to Texas at home. But you bounce back, beating Baylor 31-3. You beat West Virginia last week 48-31. And now going into this game against Kansas, it's a must-win situation. Texas won earlier this afternoon against Baylor, so they're 8-4, 6-3 in conference play, and they have the head-to-head against you. If Kansas State wins tomorrow, they go to Arlington to take on TCU for the Big 12 championship. That's what's at stake for the Kansas State Wildcats. Now, the pressure, I think, far more in Kansas State's corner than Kansas's. Of course, in rivalry games, I feel like there's pressure on both sides. You want bragging rights, all that talk. But for Kansas State, what they have going into this game, it is such a lopsided win versus defeat type of scenario. You win this game, number one, you beat your rival. Number two, you go to the Big 12 championship with a rematch with TCU, a chance to dethrone a team that is headed, at least by some standards, to the college football playoffs. TCU wins these final two games, nobody's keeping them out. They would be 13-0 and have a chance to compete for a college football national championship. Nobody would have believed you if you would have said TCU would be undefeated after Thanksgiving. So they're going to be waiting for either the Wildcats or the Longhorns on Saturday. Now, there is only two teams they can face here. So Kansas State has that type of pressure. So that could make you nervous as a Kansas State fan. And if you are nervous about this game, if you have thoughts on this game, you can call into the studio at 913-381-0810. That's 913-381-0810. But we've seen in years past, whether that Kansas team be bad, horrible, atrocious, I'm not going to say good because they haven't been in the last 13 years, Kansas State just gets fired up for this game. And every single year, I'm not sure they were playing with this much on the line. You know, they win, Big 12 championship. They lose, they're not playing the Big 12 championship. They lost to Kansas, and now they're going to play in a non-New Year's Six Bowl. That is the ceiling right now for Kansas State, because if you beat Kansas and then win the Big 12 championship, you're playing in the New Year's Six Bowl. That would be a great, great season for Chris Klieman and Kansas State. But first things first, you have to find a way to get past Kansas. I'm sure many of you out there are going, well, that's not going to be much of a tall task. Though this Kansas team is much better, the spread in this game is 12 points in favor of the Wildcats. Hey, this is a different coached Kansas team. Now, last year in Lawrence wasn't really close, but that was a Kansas team that had one win up to that point, a three-point win over South Dakota. That was a much different Kansas team. This year, they've got more star power, not a ton, but you brought in a lot of Power 5 transfers, a lot of new starters to your defense. Devin Neal's an 1,000-yard rusher. Jalen Daniels is back, and though he's not 100%, Jalen Daniels was playing at a Heisman level the early parts of the season. I think for Kansas to hang around in this game, you need a road performance like you had against West Virginia or Houston, offensively speaking. On the defensive side of the ball, you got to pray in some way that Will Howard and Deuce Vaughn just have career worst performances. I mean, let's be quite frank about this game. It's prime time, under the lights, at the Bill, rivalry game, first time in 20-plus years these programs have met with six or more wins. I want to say it was 1995, if I'm not mistaken, the last time Kansas and Kansas State met at a point in the season where they had six wins or more. KU 6-5, Kansas State is 8-3. There is just so much on the line for Kansas State. I don't know how Kansas could go in and catch them off guard. I think if Texas would have lost today, Kansas would have been boosted a little bit, because Kansas State's going, we're already playing in the Big 12 championship game. Win or lose, we're playing in the Big 12 championship game. But it's the rivalry aspect. And Kansas State has a lot of local guys that Kansas passed over in recruiting that are going to be going up against the Jayhawks with a chip on their shoulder that you do not have going for you. Now, I think it's kind of funny at times to see motivation from players. Maybe not funny, but I find it interesting how players can pull motivation. Right? I think one of the best maybe chip on the shoulder type of guys that really didn't need to have it at all or needed to have that extra fire, that extra passion, that motivation was Michael Jordan. Right? Michael Jordan would use anything to be motivated, pissed off for a game. He would just make something up maybe at times to be fired up for that game. Kansas State, every single year, you'll see in press conferences, they will say something. They will bring up something. One of the players will say they weren't recruited by Kansas, and that gives them motivation, reason to kick KU's ass every single time. I covered KU for 4 years in college. I don't recall one game where a KU player, one press conference before the Sunflower Showdown, where multiple Kansas players said, you know, K-State didn't look at us, they overlooked us, we want to go prove them wrong. Maybe I'm just forgetting it, because those games were usually forgettable in general if you're a Kansas fan. They were blowouts, they were beatdowns. But Kansas State, credit to them, credit the coaching staff, they find ways to get up for this game every single time.
KU reminds me, both of them actually, KU and K-State, just kind of creating these scenarios, and some of them real, some of them probably not real. It reminds me of...
If it works, it works, though.
If it works, it works. Have you ever seen The Program?
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me of the linebacker when he creates scenarios about the other team's quarterback. Yep. He's like, you're the one who stole my wallet and killed my mama.
Yep.
He's like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, no, I know that was you. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And when you're a football player, like Blake, you played football. You played football at the college level. So you understand that to be sort of not psychotic, but especially on the defensive side of football, you got to be fired up. You got to be passionate. It's cold. It's nighttime football. You just have to be this psychotic type of player. Give reason to go knock somebody's head
off. You're gonna have guys snorting pregame before the game.
The pre-workout type of stuff.
There we go.
The smelling salts and everything.
Yeah.
Like that's just college football and Thanksgiving weekend. And K-State is always so jacked up for this game. And I can't really fault at times KU's players because of the fact that, you know, under the Les Miles era, a lot of the guys, and even the David Beatty era, there was a lot of guys from Texas, a lot of guys from New Orleans, a lot of guys from maybe Florida, you know, that didn't really have the ties locally to Kansas. And you can't fault those kids. They're 18, 21 years old. They're going, and that gave them the best chance to go start and play football at a Power 5 level. Kansas State, though, under Bill Snyder, under Chris Klieman, they're very much local recruiters. They get the top kids in the state of Kansas. They turn three-star talent in the state of Kansas into five-star talent when they're in their final year at Kansas State. They just know how to recruit locally. They know how to mold those players and turn in successful seasons after successful seasons. And I'm a KU guy, but I have always been envious of that from the K-State football program. They don't need to go to New Orleans, Texas, Georgia, California, East Coast places to go and find four or five-star talent. When you have the coaching staff, you have the structure, you can get that done. And I think that's what's always given Kansas State a leg up in football when playing Kansas. Kansas could waltz into Manhattan at 1-9, and Kansas State, in their minds, would spin it that they're the underdog, to just be pumped up for that game, fired up for that game. And Kansas, for years, had that opportunity to have the nobody believes in us, nobody recruited us, and we want to go and prove everybody wrong. And the Kansas State coaching staff, the players, the fans, the student section, they want to prove everybody wrong. It just never happened. Now, this game specifically, you're hoping that some of the guys that Kansas has that have some of those local ties, Devin Neal comes to mind. You know, a kid from Lawrence, grew up rooting for Kansas. He likely doesn't like Kansas State. You know, he wants to be the guy to dethrone Kansas State. And if you're a Kansas player and you're looking at this game, man, you have a lot to prove. You could really put a perfect ribbon on this season if you went into Manhattan, beat them, and prevented the Wildcats from playing in a Big 12 championship game. Do I think it's going to happen? No. No, this is a game that Kansas State could just go rabid on you, win by 30. I mean, you just lost by 41 to Texas, and they had a star running back in Bijan Robinson that ran all over you. Who's to say that Deuce Vaughn couldn't do that exact same thing against this Kansas defense? That's why I just think it's going to take a perfect scenario. You know, Jalen Daniels, all the training wheels come back off. They can run the RPO. They can run the option. Devin Neal has 250 scrimmage yards. The defense forces three or four turnovers, and you're right there in it in the fourth quarter. Like, that's how it's going to happen. Kansas State, and we talk all the time about the Chiefs, right? They can play their C-minus game, their D-plus game. They can beat inferior teams. Well, going into this one, Kansas is the inferior team. Kansas State could get away playing their C or C-plus game. But if you're the Jayhawks, you want to force as many mistakes as possible, because the more mistakes you force, the mental mistakes that occur, the tenser they get, the quieter that stadium gets. There was one time I remember when I covered Kansas that game was really close. It was in Manhattan. I want to say it was 2018 or 19. Kansas lost by four. I think it was 21-17. Alex Delton started for Kansas State. Peyton Bender started for Kansas. But that game was cold, frigid, freezing, basically Siberia. And the game was 3-3 at half. I mean, it was just ugly. It was awful football. Kansas State wasn't very good that year. But the stadium got quiet in the third and fourth quarter, and that allowed Kansas to run their offense a little bit smoother. You know, their defense, they were playing well. They were adapting to the cold. Neither offense could really throw the ball, so they relied on their running backs. Kansas had a couple of guys they could utilize. I want to say back then it was Dom Williams. I think Khalil Herbert was still there at the time. I don't think Puka Williams was there to say that. Might have been the last game for David Beatty. But that's how you stay in this game. That's how you make Kansas State a little bit more tense, because they know just how much is at stake here. Now, for Kansas State, you know how you wash all that fear away, all that timidness, which I don't see them coming into the game and playing timid. You just belt Kansas right off the bat. No, first couple plays, now you jump out 7-0. No, maybe if you win the coin toss, you take the ball because you know you can score off Kansas. Like, that's how you just get this crowd immediately into it. Put Kansas at odds. You know you're going to be able to put up points with Deuce Vaughn there. You know you're going to be able to put up points with Will Howard, Phillip Brooks, Malik Knowles, you know, Sinnott the tight end. There are a lot of weapons for Kansas State that they can utilize. Now, we had Ryan Gilbert on the show on Wednesday, who works for GoPowerCat.com. He actually believes this game is going to be closer than people think. And the reason is more so health concerns for Kansas State on the defensive side of the ball. West Virginia, who has not been a very good football team this year, had a freshman quarterback, I believe, play last week in Morgantown. And the Mountaineers hung 31. Take that for what you will. You know, I think Kansas State, they were just up big majority of the game. Defense could play a little bit lax, but they're going to be without some key guys. You know, Kobe Savage, not going to be playing for Kansas State. A couple other guys, starters on that defense, are not going to be playing. And the depth maybe isn't where you'd like it to be for Kansas State. So if you're Kansas, who has a good offense, they can run the football. Jalen Daniels can operate that offense to perfection at times. That makes you think, okay, maybe if Kansas has 28 or 30 points, you're hanging around in the fourth quarter. The problem is for Kansas, they can't stop a nosebleed. That defense really struggles, especially on the road, to get off the field on third and long. They rely on turnovers to keep them in the game. And when they can't force turnovers, they're not going to be able to hang with many teams in the Big 12. Like, if you look at Kansas's schedule this year in their road games, they beat Houston and West Virginia to open up the year. The least amount of points Kansas has held an opponent to on the road this year, 30. That was against Houston when they beat the Cougars 48-30. Against West Virginia on the road this year, they allowed 42. Against Oklahoma on the road this year, they allowed 52. Against Baylor, 35. Against Texas Tech, 43. K-State, I think, of that bunch, has the second-best offense, if not the best, of those teams I just mentioned. I would maybe give the nod to Oklahoma and Norman because with Dylan Gabriel, with Marvin Mims, Oklahoma can put up a lot of points. It doesn't matter how good that team is overall. Usually Oklahoma's offense is going to be tops in the league. But maybe Kansas State's the best of them all. And by the way, this is the highest-ranked team going into a game you faced this year. You could say, oh, it's TCU. Well, TCU at the time was only ranked 17th. I know TCU is now ranked in the top five, but Oklahoma State was 18th. TCU was the only other top 25 team you faced. Kansas State going into this game is ranked 12th in the country. So you have everything going against you, I would feel like, in how this game is set up. But that doesn't make it impossible. You know, college football is excellent for a lot of reasons. One of the best is that it's so unpredictable. It really is such a treat to watch because in games like this, maybe you're just surprised. Teams that have less than a 4, 3% chance of winning, they can find a way to get it done. And eventually, at some point, just knowing how college sports work, you're going to snap that streak against Kansas State. K-State's not going to win 100 in a row. You know, even basketball, when you look at the Sunflower Showdown, remember when Michael Beasley and Bill Walker and Jacob Pullen snapped the streak against Kansas? I believe Pullen was on that team back in 2007, 2008. You know, when you snap that streak, eventually it happens. And then once you do it one time, you believe you can do it every single time. I think more so than anything, I mean, I think K-State's always had the more talent in this matchup in the last 13 years, but it's been very mental. And when you can't hang with that one team, you just know that you're not going to have a good chance. But I feel like with the culture, the identity of this Kansas team, they have a chance to maybe hang around in the fourth quarter, give themselves a shot at an upset. But for Kansas State, man, this may be the most fired up they've been all season. Man, when you talk about what's on the line, Big 12 championship, playing your rival, trying to get to a New Year's Six Bowl, like that is a lot to play for. And their last home game was against Texas, I believe it was. And they did fall in that game, and that was a game they should have been very fired up for. I'm not saying they weren't, but this one's going to be even more so than that. That crowd's going to be rabid. What an atmosphere for college football. But before we even really make our picture, that's the last thing we'll do before we head to break. Let's just say this. This is absolutely phenomenal for the state of Kansas. When both these teams are good in football, when both these teams are good in basketball, right now they're undefeated in basketball, 6-0 and 6-0, it's great for the state of Kansas because it makes your rivalry matter. It makes people tune into your games. And after years of this game being on ESPN Plus and FS1, because Kansas was either 1-9 or 2-8, you're on Fox. You're on prime time, baby. 7 p.m. kick tomorrow night between Kansas and Kansas State. The Wildcats are a 12-point favorite in this one. My prediction, and Blake, I'll get your thoughts too. My prediction in this game, I think K-State wins anywhere from 15 to 20 points, so that means I think they'll cover. I'm hoping the Jayhawks can have a hot start for the first time in
gosh, I don't know how many weeks. Oklahoma State on the road. I can't remember the last time they had a hot start. Didn't have it against Texas Tech. Didn't have it against Oklahoma. Didn't have it against Baylor. I think the last time you had a hot start on the road would have been Houston. And even then, I can't say it was a hot start because they trailed 14-0. They have not started hot on the road all season. They trailed 14-0 to West Virginia, 14-0 to Houston. Is it going to happen against Kansas State? I have some serious doubts about that. But, hey, college football is college football. I'll take K-State to win, though, 15-20 points. So I'll go 40-24. I think K-State wins 40-24 and covers against the Jayhawks.
Respectable. I think I am going 35-17 K-State.
Okay, I could see that. I think even though K-State's defense is a little bit depleted, man, it is tough to put up points at the bill. When that place is rocking and you can't really check anything at the line, have to go to maybe a quiet count, a quiet snap count, a silent count, it can change a lot of things. If Jalen Daniels is rusty like he was against Texas, this one could get very ugly. But you're hoping that Jalen Daniels is just a little bit healthier, a little closer to 100% on Saturday night against Kansas State. Again, kickoff on 7 p.m. on Fox, Sunflower Showdown. Kansas will look to snap a 13-game losing streak to Kansas State. The Wildcats are looking to move on to Arlington for the Big 12 Championship in a rematch against TCU. We'll take our first break of the final hour of the program. When we come back, I have a little bit of headlines to go over for you next on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We are back here on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Seren Petro alongside the great Blake Schneiders. Some headlines to go over, and we'll quickly give you an update on some games going on both in college basketball, college football, and what happened in the World Cup between the U.S. and England earlier today. So first things first, Missouri and Arkansas are in the third quarter now, 12 minutes to go in this game. The Tigers are down by 121-20. Need a win to move to 6-6 and become bowl eligible this year. Blake, got the game on right here on my phone in front of me because I've got Cal and UCLA on this TV up to the right. I've got Duke and Xavier here on the left. Well, Duke actually just won to move to the championship game in the Phil Knight Legacy Tournament. But Missouri and Arkansas are on my phone right here. They are driving. They are at the Arkansas 25-yard line. Confidence level at this point, you being a Tigers fan, on the Tigers pulling this out and getting their sixth win. Would you say it's somewhere between 50-55%? Over 50%? Let's just go with that. Over 50%? Under 50%? What's your confidence level in the Tigers in beating Arkansas today, now knowing of what's going on with the update I just provided you?
Under 50%.
Really?
I have no faith in the Tigers down the stretch this year. They have yet to prove me right. They've yet to prove me right all year. So, down the stretch, unfortunately, I hope I'm wrong, but I've seen this story 27,000 times this year, and I have no faith in it.
You know, I felt like Missouri was in a good spot today with Arkansas. Arkansas is still, I always hate saying nobody's playing for anything, but does Arkansas get to a better bowl game at 6-6 as opposed to 7-5? Or excuse me, 7-5 as opposed to 6-6? Not that much. I would say probably not that much. So you could get a little bit more of a laid-back Arkansas team, and Missouri desperately needs this game to be bowl eligible. I kind of like what I've seen, though, from Brady Cook offensively here. And they're at least going to have a good chance of taking the lead with the field goal. But I don't know if field goals are going to win you this game. Arkansas's offense appears to be moving the ball very well on the ground with Rocket Sanders and KJ Jefferson. I don't know. This one is really a coin flip for me at the moment. I think Missouri is going to be leading at one point late in this game. It's a matter of can that defense for the final time this year in the regular season come up with that big stop or force that big turnover. So we'll continue to keep you posted over the final 30 minutes of the show between Missouri and Arkansas, leading you up to pregame for Kansas and Tennessee, the battle for the Bahamas, battle for Atlantis. The tournament is called the championship game between the Vols of Tennessee, ranked 22nd in the country, and the third-ranked Kansas Jayhawks. Surprisingly, the Jayhawks are an underdog in this game, nearly a two-point underdog against Tennessee. They're not great offensively. I looked at the numbers. Tennessee's not great offensively. They haven't shocked me in this tournament, but KenPom, if you're into KenPom ratings, absolutely loves the Tennessee Volunteers. Blake, quick update. Luther Burden just scored for Missouri. They're
Let's
now
go,
up 26
baby.
To 21.
Let's go!
Going on the fly
I
here on the program.
The I have all
Now
the
it's over 50. Now it's over 50%. But Kansas and Tennessee here will tip off at 6:30. But some more headlines to go over here. Earlier today in the World Cup, the U.S. tied with England. A draw. I'm still going to use the soccer terminology. I'm not going to act like I'm some soccer guru. I'm not a genius like Nate Bucati is. I mean, I try my best to keep up with it. The World Cup is super fun. It's going to be a blast in Kansas City. Power and Light was a madhouse today. Soccer capital of the world. But a draw. Nil-nil. That's the other terminology I need to learn how to do.
So back-to-back.
Yes, back-to-back ties. Wales was 1-1.
Nil-nil, or 1-1, and then nil-nil.
Did I ask you this already? Way back. We're on hour number three here.
Time
but
flies,
we asked,
man.
We asked Jordan Foote about his thoughts on ties. I just don't understand how, you know, in the NFL and soccer, we can still have ties. How can there be any tie in a sport? Really, how are we already to this point, this far in to modern sports, and we still tie? The NFL is the most mind-boggling thing to me. How we don't have a solution to that point, my fix is that if you're tied at the end of overtime, sudden death with kicking.
Yeah.
No line, no snap.
I love it.
Put on a tee, kick it.
I love it.
It feels like that's an easy
and
fix.
Every made, if you're battling made, you take it back 10 yards every time.
Yes.
If you
it
both
can be
make
straight,
it,
and then if
now
you just
go back 10 yards.
So you could start in the middle, and then if you make that one, you go to the left hash, then the right hash. Boom, move it back 10 yards.
There you go.
Middle, left, right. Back, middle, left, right.
And it's not, you know.
That'd be electric in an NFL stadium.
That would
stadium.
Be awesome.
It would be absolutely
I would love
electric.
To see that because then you could just do rapid fire.
Yeah.
It'd almost be like PKs.
Yes, and that's what I was meaning.
You wouldn't have to wait. You wouldn't have to wait. Hey, offense has to go down, score. You know, you take 5 minutes in between or 2, 3, 4 minutes. It's just you go. Next guy tees it up. He goes. Next guy tees it up. You know, there's no holder. It's on a tee, so it's fair for everybody. Best kicker wins.
Is there any reason as to why right now? Because I believe after pool play, the World Cup goes into PKs. Is it time constraints?
I think it's
as to why you have to tie for points, or is that just the way they break it down? Like, I just don't know why you can't have a winner.
I think everybody's just, you know, soccer players are just sore losers. So even when they lose, they want a chance to still win somehow in a roundabout way.
Well, I was at.
I'm just kidding. All these soccer players don't take me seriously out there.
Yeah,
I
go
I
go for
know,
Blake
man.
Schneiders. That's not Jack Johnson. That's Blake Schneiders who's calling soccer players sore losers. I talked to a couple buddies that were down at Power and Light, said it was electric today, super cool. Some of them were from out of town, so they got to experience what this city's really like, both for soccer. They've seen it during football season. And, of course, at times, if they were here long enough, they saw the postseason with the Royals and what Power and Light can look like. But, again, I'm texting. I'm going, man, was it even fun down there?
Yeah.
I'm like, you sat around for 2 hours and nothing happened. And they're like, absolutely, it was a blast. Because here's the thing. In the World Cup, when you're going up against a team like England, who was supposed to kick your ass, and you tie?
That's great.
You draw? It was great. Because now all you got to do is beat Iran. That's all you got to do. You win against Iran, you move
on. Who just beat Wales 2-0.
Yes.
And I thought it was also funny, Qatar, the host country, was the first team officially eliminated.
I actually didn't know that.
Yes, just happened,
just
I believe,
now?
Today.
Okay, just today it happened.
Yeah, they became the first official team out of the World Cup, and they're the host country.
So it just feels like with the U.S., you had to tread water. And this is a very young team, which can make them, I mean, they are a big-time underdog. It's the first time they've been in the World Cup or qualified for the World Cup since 2014. I love seeing this city support the U.S. I think everybody understood that the U.S. would need a long-shot miracle to win the whole damn thing. But at least after today, you're still treading water. You're still alive. Barely breathing, but still alive. And it's not a unbelievable circumstance in which they would have to beat Iran. They just have a chance. And I think that's all you can ask for. When you're setting up these three games, right, Blake? When you're setting up these games, you just want to have a chance in all three. You want to be able to watch all three and still have a thought that they could move on. You know, they could have lost to Wales, lost to England, and here we go. It doesn't even matter anymore. And already at one weekend, everybody's tired of it.
Yeah. I think it's so funny, too, because as people who don't watch a lot of soccer, we're not
soccer gurus, not soccer geniuses.
That doesn't mean I wouldn't flip something on every once in a while. Every once in a while,
I'll
throw a sporting
game on
in my house.
Sporting KC, for sure.
It's got to be the hometown team. But how like, national pride do you get when a sport you don't even really care to watch comes on, and you're like, well, if we're going up against
it's
the
like
world,
the Olympics.
It's USA versus everybody, baby.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. And I always love the debate back and forth. Like, for soccer fans, they're going to say, yeah, draws are still fun to watch. Like, you're going to have the average Joe that doesn't watch soccer and go, that was terrible, that was boring. And soccer fans could rebuttal and say, like, baseball is my favorite sport. Soccer fans could rebuttal and go, how are you entertained by a 1-0 pitcher's duel? You're a baseball guy.
And you could have seen great defense. The goalies could have been going at it left and right.
Yeah.
I think it was the only reason it was a tad boring from what I saw, because I believe there was only 2 shots on goal. That's the only thing. There wasn't a whole lot
but
of opportunities.
Just guys hanging with everybody.
Yes. So, our good friend of the show, Joel Pinfield, I saw him tweeting out, why wasn't the U.S. subbing at the end to try to maybe get something going. Joel, your answer, I have your answer for you. I don't know. I don't know anything about soccer. So, I tweeted back. I was like, you can do that? I didn't even know. I don't understand offsides. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, it's kind of, it gives you an advantage. It's just, think about it in football. You line up offside, you're past the last defender, I think it is. We probably sound like idiots right now trying to explain soccer, but it's a good angle, because I'm somebody that doesn't watch that much, but I am trying to get people, promote the message of get your ass down to Power and Light and support America.
Have fun.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a blast. I haven't had the chance to go down there. I was actually invited down there today. Work happens, man. You got to show up, bring your lunch pail to work here and get stuff done before you can go celebrate the weekend. But, man, still a chance to go out and get something done here, to move on. And for the U.S., the men's soccer team, that is, the women's soccer team just kicks ass, man. They are so damn good. They've always been damn good. The men's team, not really there.
They're trying to recapture some glory here. Got some fresh blood, young blood, getting ready to go.
You know, I'm curious, if you're a soccer fan, is this team, how young they are, how much of a underdog they were against England, is it similar to those hockey fans back in the 80s, Miracle on Ice? You know, winning, I think it was in, what was it, Lake Placid, when they went up against the Soviet Union, the spunky bunch of college players, the hockey team for the U.S. that they made a movie about with Kurt Russell. Like, is that the same feeling we got here if you're a soccer fan? That team, a young underdog team, fun to watch. Hey, I will share that joy then. I will never try to go in there and act like I'm the biggest soccer fan in the world, but you support the men's soccer team when they are at this point, because getting to the World Cup, it's not easy. It doesn't matter if you're a big country like the U.S. You know, if you're not a soccer powerhouse like they have in England. It's just fun to watch, man. It's sports. And if you are down at P&L and you don't know anything about soccer, find a way. Cheer when people cheer.
If you would have gotten to watch the I peeked a little bit at the Portugal-Ghana game the other day. Mm-hmm. Portugal was up 3-1.
Yeah.
And Ghana came back and made it a close game, 2-3. They lost. But even a country like Ghana, who's not really necessarily known for their great soccer team, to take Portugal and Ronaldo like that to the brink, that was cool to watch.
Yeah. It can be entertaining. And I think the only time I've really sat down and paid attention to multiple soccer games at a time has been the World Cup. Like, I think of my lifetime, I think a couple times in the MLS postseason when Sporting KC had made it, you know, deep into their postseason run, you sit down, you watch some of the other games, you try to take in as much knowledge as you can. Because, Blake, let's be honest, you and I, being in this industry, you can't just go about your sports life and just not pay attention to another sport here and there. You got to be somewhat informed, and that's why after today's game, from the overwhelming majority of my Twitter followers, who I follow on Twitter, like, it was, for lack of a better word here, a success today. It was a success to hang with England, because England was a team that was supposed to just thrash you. And though there was only a couple shots on goal, great defense.
Great defense.
Great
there
defense.
We go.
And that's what I love. And I saw fans going back and forth on Twitter saying, man, that was boring. That was terrible. And soccer fans are going, what are you talking about? That was great. I take draws. That was a tough opponent, a match to play. Like, it was the little terminology things we just got to get used to here. So if I'm butchering it, I apologize.
I can't
I'm not
speak soccer. We're,
game, know match, tie, nil.
That's going to be our homework by the end of the day. Or by the end of the World Cup, you and me are going to be able to have full-on conversations. By the way, update on Mizzou.
I just saw.
Brady Cook picked up a big, tough 3rd and 4. He's got 135 yards and a touchdown on the ground.
On the ground. I was going to say, total. That's not that impressive, Blake.
135 yards on the ground. Mizzou did just run it in, but there's a holding call on Tomlinson.
Called it back.
That would have been huge for Mizzou to pick that up right there.
So to have a quick update on that, as Blake's talking about, is because this final 15 minutes of the show, trying to provide as many updates, headlines as we can for you. Missouri and Arkansas are playing. Tigers need a win to be bowl eligible. They've got the ball after they picked off KJ Jefferson. They are in Arkansas territory. 404 yards of offense today. They are averaging 9 yards per play. Tigers have the ball at the Arkansas 15-yard line. They're up 5 with 6:20 to go. It's 2nd and 8, and the Tigers are looking to not put the game away, but give Blake Schneiders a better feeling.
Yeah.
More hope in this Tigers team.
Remember earlier when I was talking all that crap? I didn't
less than
that.
50?
I didn't mean none of that.
None of it, no. They were...
I've always had faith in my Tigers,
They
baby.
Thrived off your doubt. They thrived off your negativity.
Before we go to break, a couple quick updates. Let's see. Aaron Rodgers officially has a broken thumb, so that's going to hinder...
Played since week 5 as well.
Yes, so...
Played with a broken thumb since that game in London against the Giants.
Maybe it explains a little bit more of what's been going on with the Packers' just tumultuous season.
If you were an NFL quarterback, Blake, and you were struggling, I wouldn't say Aaron Rodgers is struggling mightily, but if you were being criticized a lot, would you just pull out an injury and say, yeah, I've been playing with this. Feel bad for me.
That's not the kind of guy I am.
I think football players are tough SOBs. They play through a lot.
Yeah.
And I think Aaron Rodgers is likely playing through a broken thumb. But I'm wondering, out there in NFL history, how many players have just lied about hamstring injuries? Like muscle tendons where you can kind of just lie about it.
Yeah, because that's a feel situation. Like the trainer can't be like, well, do you feel good? And you say no, and he goes, well, you're still playing anyway. Like, it doesn't work like that. So, I couldn't do it. That's just not the guy I was. I couldn't fake an injury. I thought about faking an injury one time. It was during the worst conditioning practice we ever did. And right after I sucked it up and decided not to do that.
You would regret it.
We were done. Like, the next one. I was like, oh, see, I was that close to quitting, and
I was
didn't
this
do
close
it.
To quitting, and that is the character that you can show. But, yeah, Aaron Rodgers, nobody's going to call him that he's faking it. I know some people on Twitter were saying, oh, he's faking it because the Packers aren't
no,
a postseason team.
Not.
No, he's probably playing through a broken thumb, and
he's
what? You doubt him? Why don't you go strap on a chin strap and go play through
and
some
try
injuries?
Try to throw a football, 10 yards with a broken thumb. I promise you it hurts.
I was at Lambeau Field for the Packers-Titans Thursday night field. I was in Wisconsin. I told you last time we had the show on Wednesday. Coldest game I've ever been to in my life. And if you play with a broken thumb, I will never slander Aaron Rodgers again, because I was sitting there in the stands, not moving, going, I can't be out here. I can't be out here. The beer is not helping. If Aaron Rodgers played in a football game with grown men trying to hit him and he had a broken thumb, props to that. Credit to that.
Couple other quick headlines. Bears quarterback Justin Fields has a shoulder issue that he aggravated last week. He's listed as questionable right now. I believe he's leaning towards the playing side. They have a good game coming up. Chargers, Mike Williams is going to be out with an ankle injury that he suffered last week versus the Chiefs. And Joe Mixon is ruled out this week versus the Titans with a concussion.
That Joe Mixon injury is something to watch here, because that Tennessee-Cincinnati game is really intriguing to me. Ja'Marr Chase is leaning toward playing, and this Cincinnati Bengals team treaded water long enough. They lost to Cleveland, I believe it was, badly when they had that first game without Ja'Marr Chase. Now they've been much better, and once they get him back, folks, Cincinnati is right back in the thick of it in the AFC, a gauntlet of a conference, but still, your Kansas City Chiefs atop the conference with their 8-2 record. They'll be playing the Rams this Sunday at 3:25, hoping to move to 9-2 and continue to build that lead in the AFC West and the conference. We'll take our final break on the program, and we'll wrap it up next right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We are back here on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Soren Petro alongside Blake Schneiders. If you missed any of the show today, Blake will be loading it up onto our podcast page. We talked the Thanksgiving games from yesterday, Bills Lions, Giants Cowboys, and Vikings Patriots. We talked some Sunflower Showdown with Kansas and Kansas State. We gave you updates on Missouri and Arkansas. One last Arkansas-Missouri update. They're up 29-24 as they're reaching the end of the third quarter. But coming up next, we have the pregame show for KU and Tennessee right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.